When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.
Okay, welcome to the Big Interview Q&A show. I'm Martin Gregg, and with me today are Graeme Hunter, host of the Big Interview, and our guest for these shows, La Liga TV's Pete Jensen. We have questions, as always, from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/Graeme Hunter and from our sponsors at Bet365. First up for part two is from socio Shane Hurley. Shane says, "Hello, gentlemen. Is the key for Liverpool overcoming Real Madrid stopping Casemiro? In open play, his runs into the box and combination play this season has added to his threat from set plays. Or if not Casemiro, where do you think is the key to Liverpool overcoming Real Madrid?" So obviously Shane's referring to Liverpool-Real Madrid in the Champions League quarter-final. First leg is on Tuesday, April the 6th. I think that tie is actually being played in Spain now due to the relaxing of the COVID restriction, travel restrictions, I think. How do we see that tie, and can we pick up on Shane's point about the influence of Casemiro, or where does the key for the tie lie?
Like Casemiro does for his teammates, I'll buy the creative one, Pete, a little bit of space and time by saying that I'm glad that Mr. H is admiring Casemiro, because over almost every year since he returned from Porto, he's proven himself to be genuinely an extraordinary footballer. It's so fun to watch him. There was a point during one of the seasons where nothing was going right for Real Madrid and they were awful. The Casemiro volunteered for 90% of the what are called super flash interviews, where you're talking to the TV station live on the pitch, and he's got this very strange voice. It comes across when he's speaking as a Brazilian Portuguese natural. When he's speaking Spanish, it kind of comes across, I mean, I don't want to be mean, but a little bit country bumpkin. He kept on saying, "Ah, we're awful, I'm awful, everything's awful," really confronting the truth, but it became like emblematic of, and I'm trying to remember, Pete, which coach that was under. It was after Benitez, and therefore it was during that mad season when Lopetegui started it and Solari moved on, and this Casemiro mea culpa thing became a little pastiche at the end of really big defeats, where he's like, "We're playing terribly, we're going to have to try harder, we all know it's our fault," when that's not really the way that the rest of the Real Madrid players felt. It's not the way that Real Madrid as an institution felt. They always feel something's wrong, you know, kill the messenger and everybody behind it, and then buy new talent, whether it's coaching or players, and move on. And generally, like Abramovich, Chelsea, it works. But that was the only season since he came back from Porto where there was anything really that you could pick up on Casemiro's play, because week in, week out, whether he's exhausted, whatever formation he's playing in, whether he is enjoying himself or not, his choice of position, his ability to staunch the flow of teams that want to attack around the defensive midfield position, or teams that think they've beaten Varane or Ramos or Militao, time after time, Casemiro will pop up in situations whereby he's like, he should have a cape and a mask, and people should be describing his superpowers, because there have been, in modern terms, I think, really few players who read the game as well from defensive midfield as Casemiro. He's not like Kante, who's like 16 men all in the one shirt running everywhere and snuffling the ball and running around like a terrier after a tennis ball. He's not like that. And he's not like Busquets, whereby everything is a computer, but short pass, move, short pass, give it again, there's a gap. I've seen it before everybody else. He's not like either of those. But the thing that complements what Casemiro does in a defensive sense is that he is an extremely, extremely good attacking footballer. He's so clever about when he, in the rare occasions that he goes high up the pitch in a non-set ball situation, his ability to pass, his ability to shoot from range, his cleverness, his deftness, allied to what he's got, which is a big physical unit. If you muck about with him, he never loses his. He's never even come close to losing his temper. What he does do is don a cloak of invisibility in terms of, I reckon that in his Real Madrid career, he probably should have seen about 8 or 9 red cards. He's seen one for not backing. He'd been booked already and he wouldn't back away from the ball at a free kick. He was trying to buy time. His second booking was, if you want to say Al Capone in taxes, then I couldn't possibly comment. But he is a phenomenon and you're guaranteed, if you appreciate football, watch any Real Madrid game. It doesn't matter whether they're on form or who the opponent is. Casemiro will give you 100% entertainment if you enjoy football.
Yeah, he's. I think Sergio Ramos has asked Casemiro a couple of times, can you lend me your shin pads or light a candle for me or something, because I want some of what you've got. He tells a great story, Casemiro, about when he was 12 years old, trying to get into his first... big club into their academy. I can't remember the club now. All the candidates, all the kids are surrounding the kind of coaches, and the coaches call out, right, who here's a number 9? And Casemiro is a centre forward at this point. He's a 12-year-old and he loves to score goals and he's a centre forward. And Casemiro, smart as a whip, even then sees all the hands going up and thinks, oh, okay, keep your hand down, keep your hand down. And then the next question is, who here's the number 10? And obviously even more hands go up. We're in Brazil, even more hands go up. And Casemiro again keeps his hand down by his side. And he waits until basically the question is, who here's a pivote? Who here's a holding midfielder? And hardly any hands go up and he sticks his hand up and he ends up getting in. So he's always had that instinct to get into the box. And we've seen it from set plays and we've seen it more and more in open play. And quite often in that brilliant midfield three with Modric and Kroos, the triangle will be flipped and he'll be the furthest forward and it'll be Kroos and Modric who are closer to the central defenders. And now they have Varane in the mix, Valverde in the mix as well, who's back, although he's got an injury. I think that might be just a kind of a 7 days rest and then he'll be back for the two games. I thought they were very impressive at the weekend against Celta Vigo. The press that they put on Celta Vigo, that was as intense as I've seen it all season, with Vinicius and Benzema leading it up front. Benzema could probably do with a better strike partner, but I think if they're going to play 4-4-2, then Vinicius is probably the best of the bunch to play alongside him, and you certainly get the intensity and the physicality and the running from him. With Valverde, Modric, Kroos and Casemiro behind, there was an intensity to Real Madrid that we haven't seen too often this season. So they're coming into the right sort of shape and form for the game, but I still think there are big question marks about how they'll be able to defend against Liverpool if Liverpool are at their best. The gaps between the fullbacks and the central defenders. Varane has not always been at his best this season. He had a shocker against Luis Suarez in the Madrid derby. I fancy Liverpool to get the better of Real Madrid, despite the fact that I think they are probably at their best. They've timed their form and their physical condition well, and they're ready for the run-in.
A quick addendum is Shane said, if not Casemiro, what specifically? And it's really clear that irrespective of how outrageously well Kroos and Modric are playing when the chips are down, because every time this season either Zidane's job needed rescuing or the season needed rescuing, particularly Kroos and Modric, but certainly Casemiro too, have gone brilliant. This is when we love it. We love being in the kitchen when it's hot and the fat is splattering everywhere and the chef is shouting. It's absolutely catnip to them. But if you run past Cruz, he doesn't turn and chase. He needs to have the going good. Certainly, he's one of those who, against Atalanta and against Celta, was incredibly up there, being part of the press that Pete described. But he looks disdainfully at any idea that if somebody's run past him and is running away towards Courtois' goal, that it's his job to run with them. So it's absolutely essential to do that. And Pete's point about, it looks like Carvajal's not going to be ready, which I think is a terrible shame. Carvajal, for even if he's got limitations, is part of the beating heart of Real Madrid in terms of his aggression, his work rate, his tackling, his use of the ball high up the pitch. Carvajal remains a really good attacking right back, and he's positionally, quite sound. So it looks like it'll be Lucas and Mondi. Both of them are good players. Lucas has risen to the challenge, but they're given the most extraordinary shame. Listen, if you're watching it, you'll know this. There were big spells against Celta where, and this is, it's just incredible. After having tried to find ways to describe the sort of mental sensations that goes on in Marcelo's head when he's told, right now, the structure today is, and the idea about this is, and your opponent and Marcelo will put, the only thing Marcelo hasn't done, to surprise you, is during the game swap strips with the opposition and play for 15 minutes for them, because he's literally done everything else in football that you shouldn't do. And Mondi comes in and you think, well, maybe we'll get a sober gentleman who's an athlete and strong and can create, but kind of has one eye on doing his job. And he was at centre-forward a lot of the time against Celta Vigo. The left-back was at centre-forward. And not on an outrageous break moment where somebody's got support in their foot, hanging around the penalty spot going, this will be me today. And Liverpool have to exploit that, because there is no club in recent memory that says to both its right back and full back, lads, get out there and just go mental today. So getting behind the full back, Shane, might sound basic advice, but I think it might pay dividends.
Okay, the second question is from our sponsors at Bet365, and I think it's kind of semi-related to Shane's query. They're asking, there's been one Spanish representative in the Champions League semi-finals in the last two seasons, and there may not be one this year. Spain's dominance of the Champions League, is it now over? Interesting question. Do we see this as a blip, or is it part of maybe a more kind of worrying trend going forward?
I think that the domination of the Champions League isn't feeling the same at the moment, because, Sevilla getting turned over at home, Barcelona getting turned over at home by Paris Saint-Germain, to follow on from the Juventus pumping they took in December from a side that isn't going to win the title in Italy, that is now struggling to make sure that it finishes in the top four. Those are clearly ominous signs to go with the way in which they only used to, in the good times, they only used to take pumpings away from home in Rome and Paris and Liverpool. And I think that Sevilla, with an addition in goals, Dimitrovic next season, which I think will improve them, and Sevilla with some added goal power, you can be sure that Sevilla will bring in probably two key signings, one a creative central midfielder and another goal scorer. I think Sevilla can then begin to replicate the way in which they were a Europa League force and do so in the Champions League, is my opinion. I'd very much like to believe that Villarreal win the Europa League, far from guaranteed, but it's not unimaginable. It won't be Granada, sadly, but it's not unimaginable that Spain has five teams in the Champions League next season. I would have thought that there's something seriously, in my opinion, wrong in European terms about Atletico Madrid. And I think personally, even though there is still a chance of Simeone winning the title, and if he does that, then my call won't be answered. But Atleti are not properly moving forward under Cholo Simeone. They have moved forward in terms of the squad. The squad is very, very, very good. And they've got a squad that, given the troubles that looking left and looking right to Barcelona and Madrid, should have been capable of winning the title and should have been capable of keeping their gap sufficiently healthy that now there wouldn't be a debate about who's going to be champion when In fact, it is still just about a three-way race. And I think Simeone's... I think his ability to be as hungry and as inventive and inspiring as he was has gone. And it probably went long before he bought a Rolls-Royce that he gets chauffeur-driven around Madrid in. And I wrote an ESPN column about, you know, comparing him to Wenger and Wenger's rubbish that, you know, finishing top four was like a trophy and that fueling the financial beast at Arsenal became his leitmotif. And there's a universe between living like that and earning lots of money and showing that your salary, which Diego Simeone's salary is absolutely gigantic, is justified in terms of what you're earning for the club. There's a universe between that and winning. Because winning is tough. Winning is really hard. And Simeone's gone soft. So that's ticking through the candidates for next season's Champions League. And if Simeone wins the title, and really almost in any terms, because he's been renewed relatively recently, I don't see Atletico waking up and smelling the coffee and going, we've got a guy who's making us lots of money, but that's not enough for us. So it bothers me a little bit. And Atleti were utterly... utterly atrocious against Chelsea across two legs. I mean, genuinely atrocious. And there isn't that much between the two teams or the two squads. And Chelsea should have won by a higher margin than the three goals overall. So I think Barcelona, we've covered in part one of this. Barcelona are nearly back and with correct surgery this summer become a threat in the Champions League again. I think they showed that in Paris. And Real Madrid are just like... what's her name in... come on now, Graham. Right, she's in the bath. Is it Michael Douglas? And she's in the bath and everybody thinks she's dead and up she comes out of the bath and... Is it Fatal Instinct? You just can't get rid of them. There's just no way possibly to shake Real Madrid away from being competitors for the Champions League. And they're desperate for a big-name striker and they might get a big-name striker. Their huge dilemma is that they can't quite make up their mind if Ramos is staying or not. Benzema's out of contract in 2022. Varane is out of contract in 2022. There's an enormous amount of housekeeping to be done and done well by Real Madrid. But just say the name. It's Real Madrid. If anybody thinks they won't be competitive winning the Champions League again next season, then they haven't been paying attention.
It's a bit forced, I think, when we draw these conclusions about, you know, three teams in that league have, you know, not got through to the quarterfinals. Therefore, that league has a problem because, as Graham says, the reasons why Barcelona fell at the last 16 hurdle are completely different to the reasons why Atletico Madrid fell at the last 16 hurdle. And Sevilla at this moment in time, that's probably where they are. They're a last 16 team. Next season, hopefully, with a couple more additions, they can finally go beyond that. I completely agree about Atletico Madrid. The first leg in particular was just abysmal. I mean, it was Mourinho with them, some more Mourinho on the top, wasn't it? It was trying to get that 0-0 with a team that doesn't actually defend as well as it did 5 or 6 years ago. And he's, as Graham says, he's got the talent to play differently now and to be about more than that. But I don't think he's going anywhere. Regardless of what happens in the title race. But Madrid will come back stronger next season. I think they're convinced that Mbappe wants to play there. And I think they have faith in Mbappe not signing a new deal at PSG. Whether that means they then have to still wait for another year before they get him, but obviously if they can somehow make that work and Mbappe ends up at Madrid, then they become, you know, one of the favourites again every season, as they were when Ronaldo was there. And Barcelona are already rebuilding. The young players that are coming through at Barcelona are reasons for their supporters to be cheerful. And you know, they will also find the resources from somewhere to move forward. So this is a blip this season. One team in the last, what are we, quarterfinals now, I think next season. But I think Madrid will be back with a bang and who knows, might go further. Let's see what happens against Liverpool. Atleti's, as Graham has said, is the big question. Can they? I mean, he has reached two finals. Let's give Simeone some credit. But the demands to do something a little bit more than what he was doing before, and the inability to do that, it's the next step for him, and he's been a few years now trying to take it and not been able to take it.
And those two finals have scarred him, Pete. I mean, without question, the fact that each were so agonisingly close to victory, the fact that each of them were against Madrid, he's quite a superstitious man. I think, I mean, far be it from us to say, stop speaking so frankly, because that's what we thrive on, we crave. But when he gave that interview after the Milan defeat to Real Madrid on penalties about, every time I hear the Champions League hymn, I feel pain. That's a great line, and you might worry about his psychology and all that. But then if you tie that phrase to the performances we're talking about against Chelsea in Bucharest and London, you're like, oh yeah, well, we can see it. And that's no good. You know, he who dares wins. And I genuinely think that two things are combining. I think that the damage done by Real Madrid has until now, people can reinvent themselves, has broken Simeone as a force in Europe, and then subsequently being knocked out in both the quarterfinal and the semi-final by Real Madrid after those defeats. You know, it's been four punches full in the nose, leaving him bloodied and bruised. And it's really sad to say, but, you know, he's happy. When he was reaching those finals, he was kind of jogging about on his own in Madrid. He'd left his family behind in South America. He was in the point of leaving his wife. His kids were you know, they were awfully sad about him leaving and changing continent to go to his beloved work. And he was a driven man. He was on his Jack Jones. He was driven. He was younger. What he was doing was for a reason, for a cause. And now, you know, they've, you know, his salary is about 40 times what it was. And the club desperately need him to keep generating that revenue because of the debt that they've got and the way that they've spent on Lamar and Joao Felix and, you know, the financing. They're part of the financing of the Metropolitano. And he gets a pat on the back again, and he gets sugar lumps in Pavlovian terms for not the wrong thing, but not enough. And so he did reach, Martin, he did reach two finals. Atleti have been magnificent. He's the most successful coach in the history. And it's just, anybody who listens to me knows that you have to put in context what I'm saying. In context, he's still an extraordinary man. He's been, you know, a whirlwind Tasmanian devil force for Atleti since he took over. But nobody's dominant forever.
Okay, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a moment with a couple more questions to complete part two of this month's Q&A.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thank you. And we're back with an audio question from Socio Tom Lee.
Greetings, Graham and Pete. It's Socio Tom Lee here with one for the March Q&A. The team I'd like a bit of a profile on, please, is the team that in the Europa League have drawn Manchester United, Granada, the Andalusian side, who, from a limited knowledge, they seem to concede a lot of goals, but they're no mugs. I see they made Atleti sweat recently for 3 points. And if my eyes don't deceive me, they knocked none other than Napoli out of the Europa League recently. So I suspect there'll be no pushover. What do we know? What can we expect? And how big a threat are they to United? Thanks, gents. Cheers.
Here's one for television viewers of the 70s. The reason that Molina and Soldado score so much is great service you get renting your colour set from Granada. Great service you get. It's got to be said.
Yeah. Their story is incredible. Last season, everybody expected them to be fighting against relegation, and obviously they ended up getting into the Europa League. And the manager is hugely impressive. Started out at working in the severe youth categories. Monchi's a massive fan, so you know, if 2 + 2 ends up making 4, then you know he'll be the next guy after Lopetegui. I don't give them a huge chance against United, but having dumped out Napoli, who knows?
It'll be hard to compliment Tom's knowledge because he's so forensic about how he looks at teams. But I think that one of the things that it can't be called a total shock that a Spanish team that is unused to playing in Europe copes, because one of the things that's been a trademark of the time that Pete and I have spent living in this country is that teams, you don't often get flash in the pan clubs in Spain where all the talent is bought. Teams tend to be trained well. Those players that have come through academy systems in Spain know how to cope with the ball. And in Europe, one of the things that's most difficult, if you're playing a rival that is not particularly known to you apart from computer clips and the dossier you've been given, and you don't retain the ball or you don't use it intelligently, they'll do you. If you go to foreign and unheard of places and you keep the ball in the same manera, the same way as you do week in, week out, then it allows your quality to take over and to impose itself. And I think that as well as having an extraordinary coach who's patently good, the way in which Granada have blended players that have been there as loyal servants for a long time to bring them up and brought in the right type of talent has been extremely clever. I think that they're a really well compensated squad. And in fact, for a club of their resources, they've got quite a lot of depth because they've had far more tests than they should have been ready for this season, in that their league performance, apart from moments when they look as if there's been a little bit of an after effect of injuries, their league performance this season has been exceptional. And I did an interview with the lady who's their MD, Patricia, I forget her second name, when they'd just come off the plane from playing Molde. They whistled back in a taxi, and one of the things she was talking about was the way in which they've been concerned about the European campaign draining their players. Because the majority of the players haven't played a lot of European football in their life before, and playing Thursday, Sunday is tough. And she said that they'd done both all the physical tests and the medical tests, and they'd spoken to the players too about what effect it was having. And she said that they're all flying on adrenaline right now. None of them feel tired. The late night flights coming back from other destinations, although not from Norway because they flew on the morning of the Friday, the outright endorphins and adrenaline is keeping them flying as a squad. I think that, albeit that there's youthful talent across the pitch, and for my taste, Yangel is a special player, and you know they'll do well to retain him because I think that at his age, with his profile, he's one of those who's potentially bought by a much bigger club and by a third of the way through next season, people are going, flipping it, what a great player this is. And I think that initially, you know, they made a good bet on Mia, and his season has looked as if he's struggling with the physicality of it and to impose himself as well as he did at the beginning of the season. And hopefully that changes. And therefore, I think you have to give credit to the way in which they invested in two guys. I don't know, Pete, correct me, but if you put Molina and Soldado's ages together...
About 72, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah. Because Soldado's 35-ish, but Molina's older still.
Molina's 38,
yeah. When you make that deal, you have to think it's a risk. But don't you feel that they've, even beyond the goals, and each of them has scored quite well, the know-how, the leadership, the ability to show people around them, this is what you do?
Absolutely, and part of the reason why Getafe have fallen apart, and you hit on it earlier when you said about the lack of fans, but another of the big reasons is that Molina's gone. He was so important to them, and Soldado brings all the same qualities, and of course they've got Suarez as well, Luis Suarez, who's not going to be fit to play, but that's a good signing as well, and in the longer term he's going to be great for them. They're very much a squad, not a team. I mean, the players have been in and out all season because of injuries, because of coronavirus positives. And you pretty much get the same sort of performances from them, regardless of who it is. He's got such a strong squad there. It's difficult to name, you know, kind of first team. Rui Silva would be the first team goalkeeper. Dominguez Duarte and probably Germán Sánchez in the middle of the defence, although they've got Vallejo as well. You'd probably say Carlos Neva and Fulquier as the full-backs. Usually play 4-3-3, so two wingers either side of either Molina or Soldado. Darwin Machis and Kennedy would probably be the two wide players.
He's
and then
evolved,
in midfield,
wouldn't you say, Kennedy? Don't you feel that we're getting more from Kennedy now?
Yeah, most definitely. Mm. And he would be one of those who they probably would miss. Who they would miss if he's not there. Yangel, Graham's already mentioned, I think will definitely go on to bigger and better things, whether that's back to City or whether that's somewhere else. And Montoro is very important to them as well. And the other thing I say about them is they very rarely are out of games. I mean, there was a freak result earlier in the season when Atleti beat them 6-1, but they very rarely, you know, they're capable of playing a bad first half and they're still in the game. And then they turn things around and they can come away with the 3 points. They're durable. That's what.
Well, when you make the comparison, given that Tom's a United fan, and his question is based upon Real Sociedad are much higher at the table, they're much better promoted. They've got several players who are Spain quality, and therefore you'd say that a snapshot view, they're more recognisable, they're more iconic, and yet United whirlwinded them completely. And it got embarrassing in the first leg and could have been more. And whether United go through or not, and, you know, like you, I think that it's more probable that certainly United at full tilt, I think, are a relatively impressive side, and you don't sit second in the Premier League without having character as well as ability.
They won't find Granada as simple to beat, I don't think, as they did Real Sociedad. Granada's engines look a little bit run down a little at the moment, and the injuries don't help them. But I think that they'll find Granada far, just on your theme about them, they're rarely out of matches. They can't treat them as well. It's another Spanish team, they're lower down the table. We pumped Real Sociedad. That would be a drastically bad way to approach the tie.
No, you're right. And they're more pragmatic. I mean, they'll change things up if they see the game slipping from them. They won't allow what happened to Real Sociedad to happen to them in the first leg.
Okay, last but not least for this month's Q&A is Finlay McDonald, one of our beloved socios, who says, how well do you think Rangers can do next year in the Champions League, given how well Porto, a team they drew and beat last season, have done this year? And second question, are there any strikers in La Liga who could potentially replace Alfredo Morelos should he move on? So, Pete, I might come to you in a moment regarding a possible La Liga replacement for Morelos. But Graham, let's talk a little bit about Rangers. Obviously, just to note that they go in to the third qualifying round, so they'll have four matches before they get to the group stages proper, if they can negotiate them. I mean, we know how hard it is to get through those four matches and get to that stage, but at the same time, you know, this is a squad that they have a system and they have players who kind of know how to get results in Europe, and it is quite an intriguing thought that they could get through those ties and then make an impact in that group stage.
I think that the amount of money available in the Champions League should Rangers get through to the group stage is such that they have to gamble on keeping Morelos. And I think that keeping Morelos is something that is probably useful in the short term. There's clearly a profit coming on the Colombian that they brought in from Finnish football, thanks to Jonathan Johansson, who shares an agent with the Buffalo, and that's why Rangers got tipped off about him. He's been extremely impressive for them, and more so in Europe than, say, for example, in the Old Firm matches where he got his first goal against Celtic in I don't know how many, 15, 16 matches, I don't know. But in Europe, he shot very quickly against a mix of opposition, admittedly. Become Rangers' leading scorer in Europe. And I think that one of the things that's important is that Morelos is a natural-born goal scorer, but I'm not 100% certain that his pace or his physical size will eventually take Rangers to where they want to go, which is but ultimately is going through a group stage. I think that for so long as Klopp isn't burned out this summer, I hope he doesn't leave. I think he's been a good thing for the game in Britain, and I hope that he leaves in a way that says, there's my sign-off. They're still in Europe. They beat Real Madrid. Who knows? They go all the way. They win the Champions League. And then he says, I'm taking a wee sabbatical. And the point of that is that I don't have a doubt now that even though Liverpool should be thinking, do we put Xabi Alonso in the running for the next manager, or is it automatically Steven Gerrard? And I think they should be making a field, and that they should be assessing candidates against one another. Steven Gerrard was patently anointed as the next level manager in Liverpool's minds, and he's done nothing but augment that case at Rangers, because the quality of the way in which the team plays now compared to the football they were playing when he inherited Rangers, the way in which individual footballers have been improved, and the way in which the manager, the coaching team's needs have been meshed with the way in which Ross Wilson signs has been exemplary. You know, I think it's absolutely exemplary what they've done. They've gone from coming up from lower divisions to finding their feet to being outclassed by Celtic because of their better squad and because of their Champions League money to being utterly dominant and for a reason. And there's character in that squad. If you look at their unbeaten record, you don't do that by being dominant in football terms. The character of being hungry for it every single day. I think that the number of times that they've avoided defeat this season, both domestically and Europe, is extraordinary. When I interviewed Steve Gerrard almost exactly a year ago, I think I counted up something like, I mean, by then I think he'd had 28 European matches as a debut manager. So how many has he got now? Let's say high 30s, at least. When I counted back, I think Bill Shankly took 12 years to get as many European ties as a coach as Steven Gerrard had this time last year. And yet not one of them, not the coaching staff, not the players, have looked overwhelmed. They got beaten by a smarter, harder team across two legs. And I've been hugely impressed with Steven Gerrard, not just his character or the way he comports himself back at the club or in the media, but as a coach. He and McAllister and Keane patently improve the playing style, playing understanding, the maturity and individual. So I want to see them in the Champions League. Selfishly for Aberdeen, the way in which they're changing our points profile is utterly fantastic. And I want to see Steven Gerrard from Rangers creating a system whereby when Aberdeen are champions soon under Stephen Glass, it's us that's getting the direct entry in the group stage of the Champions League. Now, it took a long time to get there, but that's been my principal point.
So coming to you, Pete, if Rangers sell Morelos this summer and if they have a little bit of money to spend, where should they be looking in La Liga?
I think Brathwaite's a possibility. I don't think Brathwaite's got much of a future at Barcelona. I think he was a very good player when he turned up, and I think he's got even better. He can only have got better playing with the players and training with the players that he's been with. Whether he fits into to the way that Steven Gerrard's Rangers plays, I don't know. They play 4-3-3, don't they? So, you know, that would work for Brathwaite. And I think he's certainly got the quality to play in the Champions League, because we've seen him play and score goals for Champions League in Barcelona. What would Barcelona want for Brathwaite? I think they bought him for 18 million. Would he want to go to Rangers? Well, you can sell it a lot better now that they're in the Champions League if they get over those hurdles and make it to the group stages. There are a couple of other good strikers, I think, that maybe are a level now that they won't stay at into next season. One is Rafa Mir, who I think is a fantastic combination of aerial ability and speed. Reminds me a little bit of Andy Carroll when Andy Carroll was at his really best. He's owned by Wolves, but he's currently at Wesker, so probably they're going down and he won't stay there. And the other one I really like is Roger Marti. I mean, he's 30 now, Roger Marti, but he I don't know, Graham, I mean, probably Roger would you think Roger Marti at Rangers? He's got that sort of
in terms of muscularity and aggression and running and space opening, he's a move up on Morelos. He hasn't got Morelos' numbers this season, but he's playing a far more competitive league. I absolutely hate the thought of Roger Marti leading the line at Rangers when they come up to Petardi or something like that, because he's a bundle of energy and he's a really good finisher. I think your shouts are great, and I only have to compliment you. You know, if it took me a long time to get to the point with Aberdeen, you got to the point straight away where you can see a King Henrik Larsson trained Brathwaite going to Rangers and dominating. I mean, given Larsson's profile at Celtic, that is the story to end all stories.
Brilliant. Great stuff, guys. Okay, that's it for the second part of this month's Q&A. Thanks to all our socios who sent questions for this month's show. Graham Hunter and Pete Jensen, thank you very much for being here. And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back with more big interviews very soon.
Great service, great sets. That's what you get from Granada. It's better TV. That's why millions agree. Rent Granada.
Great service, great sets. That's Granada.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.